Hello, hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Beautiful Legacy Podcast. I am your host, Abigail Gagnon, and today we are going to be talking all about our cycles. Men, if you are listening, this is probably some good things that you should know, but I also understand if you just want to skip this episode. Also, I would like to just say that for some reason my stomach is growling and I already ate. So if you guys hear that in the background, I do apologize. But we have a special guest, Sarah, with us today. Sarah, can you introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hi, I am Sarah Corman. I live in Southern Maine and I am a cycle coach amongst other things. But I'll stop there if we want to do a little bit more. Nice to be here.
Awesome. And so what got you into educating and coaching on this topic?
Yeah, it's such a good question. And one that I get all of the time. I always joke that it's like, well, how did I get started? Well, first I was born and it just went from there, but no, there is a windy road that has led me here. So I'm a cycle coach. So I work with women to learn about the phases of their monthly cycle. And it's not so much for the purpose of fertility, although obviously that does come into play, but mostly for self-awareness and for like restoring our self-trust and to have better communication with our bodies and in turn then our other relationships as well. And really allow ourselves to live closer in tune with the nature that we are. I'm also an artist and I'm also a part-time retreat chef. And I got into this work, well, so like a little bit about my background. So I used to work in the restaurant industry, which I know, Abigail, you and I relate to each other on very much. And I was a restaurant manager, and that was my career for about 10 years or so. And it's a very much hustle and bustle kind of life. And there's not really an option to like ever to like do less or to call out of work or, you know, to not be on all of the time. And in those days, I really did not understand what taking care of my body was. I had a much different idea of what self-soothing looked like compared to the self-care that I now understand that I need. And I really didn't ever realize how much that lifestyle truly affected my cycle. So I had always had really horrible PMS, like ever since I can remember, debilitating cramps, like calling out of school on the first day of my period. Once I started working, like wanting to call out of work, but that was not really an option. So the messaging around me was always like, this is normal. This is just what women go through. Just hush, hush, like plug it up and just power through, or, you know, go on birth control and that'll just fix everything. Birth control is a whole nother story because I know a lot of young women experience that also, which we can get into. But anyway, so I eventually ended up leaving the restaurant industry to actually follow my artistic pursuits. I ended up taking a full-time apprenticeship with a goldsmith in his jewelry repair shop because I fell in love with metalsmithing and making jewelry. So I worked with him for a few years and then followed that creative path and made it my own for the past, you know, 10 years or so. And, you know, it really did take a lot of time to kind of like re-regulate my nervous system and to really reestablish my relationship with like workflow and all of that after coming out of that kind of like hustle culture. So that's where I was, a year or so after I left the restaurant industry. I actually lost my mother. She passed away to cancer just after my 30th birthday. And this grieving process is really what initiated me into what I call now my health journey, where I was really being asked to slow down and to really engage in like a new way of living where self-care was the priority. Like this was the center of my life after seeing the way that my mother's health had taken effect and being told like, oh, this runs in your family. This is genetic. You're probably going to have this too. And I just always knew somewhere in my mind that like, yes, this had run in my family, but I was always going to be called to break the chain. Like I knew that. I just always knew that. So it all kind of rolls together when I was like in this phase of like really reestablishing my relationship to food and to work and, you know, just slow living in a different kind of way. And I heard somebody say once, "Oh my God, I love getting my period." And I was like, "What? Like that? Are you kidding? Like I've never heard that. I've never heard anyone say that before. Like my experience of my cycle was monthly pain. It was embarrassing, roller coaster emotions, shameful hiding, all this stuff. Like I did not even know that loving a period was even on the table. So this revelation like really just opened up my eyes to what my body was doing and what my cycle actually is. And I was realizing how I was really working against my natural cycle in, you know, the like crazy hours of the restaurant industry and the stress and the hustle bustle. And like, no wonder I was feeling so burnt out. And I realized it was time to honor myself and honor my menstruation in a way that no one had ever taught me. I had never heard about this before. This is just not the common conversation that's had around periods, you know? So I am a questioner. I am like a forever seeker and very, very curious in this life. And this whole concept of like loving your period led me down a path to really study the cycle. So for the past 5 or 6 years, I've really invested my time and my resources. I've taken several courses and certifications to really help me be able to guide others. But truly my greatest teacher has always been my own experience. And I find that that's really true for everyone, like really studying nature, studying my own cycle, tracking my cycle has been my most valuable resource here. So now I have a coaching practice where I guide others through the sea of meaning in their lives to be able to really trust themselves and trust their bodies and be able to know what it means to listen to their body and to really have their own intuition be the thing that shines through and to really allow the cycle to be a roadmap for self-care instead of having it be something that we have this negative relationship with that we end up denying ourselves what our body truly wants. So yeah, so my path has been very winding to get here, not just like this straight shot, but these experiences are really what have like forged my path into radical self-care. And now I'm here to meet others at the door. You know, when they decide that it's time to do something a bit different, I know what that's like. And I'm just here to help you and to help you walk through when you're ready. And that's how I got here.
I love that. I feel like a lot of what you were saying, I was like, that's me. I can totally relate to that. That's, I love it. I'm really sorry to hear about your mom passing.
Thank you.
For me, it to slow down was because of my health getting worse and some of my irregular period during working in food service for a decade was also thyroid related, and getting that under control. But I definitely can relate to so much of what you said. And I wouldn't say that I love my period, but the more that I understand about my cycle and different things like that, I think has definitely helped, especially after I got off birth control.
Yes.
I think that that really helped as well. And with that, what, with the coaching and stuff, do you do all of that virtually or do you do, coaching and stuff in person?
Yeah. So my one-on-one coaching practice is virtual, but I do also hold events, monthly meetings, here in my local area where, we talk. I have this program called Cycle Talk, and it's a gathering space for, you know, local people, local women to come and just know that they are not alone and that this is a place where we can talk about menstruation. And I offer rotating topics every month, and I bring in some guest speakers to talk about, you know, herbalism and other like alternative health aspects to help with the cycle. But yeah, my one-on-one coaching is virtual. Yeah.
That's awesome. And what would you say some of the biggest lies that people believe about their cycle are?
Yeah, I love that. I love this question so much. There's a lot, I would say. I think the first one is that we can get pregnant on any day of our cycle. That was something for me that when I learned that, like well into my adulthood, I was like, I've been lied to my entire life, you know, and that it was shocking to me that I didn't know that. That's not something that's talked about. We'll talk about this in a little bit, but there is a specific window where ovulation is occurring, where the egg is even viable to be fertilized. And it's a very short window. There are other extenuating circumstances actually where you can ovulate off of that period of time. But for the most part, if you do know and track your cycle, there's really just this one little window of getting pregnant. So that was a huge like misunderstanding about the cycle. And then the other thing that I don't know if this is considered a lie, but we are really, we're shown and taught that we are here to show up the exact same way every single day. And especially in like these industries where production is like the main focus, we are just expected to every day show up and have the same amount of output and have the same amount of production, have the same amount of creativity and to do the same thing every single day. And that is just not how a woman's body works physiologically, you know, and emotionally and mentally. So that's another lie, you know, that we are here to just work within the masculine hormone schedule, which is this 24-hour, it's called a circadian rhythm, where there's something that repeats every day. Whereas the feminine hormone cycle is called an infradian cycle. And this is 28 days, you know, or however long your cycle is. But that means that we take an entire month to process through a cycle of emotions, whereas the masculine hormone schedule repeats the same every single day. So for them, yeah, like working in a job where you can just show up the same every day, like makes a lot of sense. But for women, there is really different. Like we feel differently throughout the month. We are better at certain things than others at different times. So when we try to show up exactly the same every day, we're actually working against what's natural for us. And we can see that actually in the metaphor of the seasons of the year, because this is actually the creative cycle that life is following and it expresses through our bodies. So yeah, so that's, I would say that those are two of the big ones that were really, really impactful for me when I first really understood what those things meant.
I love that. I've never really thought about some of the things the way that you describe them. So I think that that's really awesome. And I know for me being homeschooled, I wasn't like in a health class where they were teaching stuff, but there definitely are things that I don't know if I just was never told or if I was told like once, like at the beginning and just didn't remember. But there are definitely things as I've gotten older, and it's kind of funny, but not at the same time, where I'll say certain things and my husband will be like, well, don't you know the answer to that? It's your body. And I'm like, I don't know. I wasn't told. Or if I was told, I was too young to understand and I was never told again. And so it's interesting, like how different things, like him and I have actually like looked into things, and he'll be like, oh, this is why. And I'll be like, I'm learning so much about my body with my husband. And it's just, it's really interesting.
Yeah. I love that. I love that you're learning together. And I even love what you said at the beginning, like men, you know, this conversation is really for you also, you know, even though you might think it's not, but if you have any woman in your life at all, you're also living in a cycle, you know, you are also living in their cycle, even though you might not realize it. So to be learning that together is so cool. I love that.
Yes, exactly. I know when I was working in a summer camp, and there was one summer and it was mainly all women, and I think there was two or three guys, and all of us women like synced up, and it was not a fun time for those guys. I felt so bad. We were all like wanting chocolate and moody and crying at nothing. And my boss at one point was like, Abigail, I don't know why you're crying. My guess is it's because it's your time of the month, but I need you to go do this. And I'm like, I don't know why I'm crying either.
Right. I know. And that's such, we all have that experience of like, why are you crying? You know, and it's like, well, I don't know. And it's okay. Like, obviously it's okay not to know, but when you get really into learning about the phases of the cycle and what each phase is and what it's for, you start to really understand your emotions on a different level too. So it's so cool. And, you know, like you were saying, like, we didn't know this stuff. Like, we were not, this was not a priority. And I went to public school, Abigail, and they did not talk about this. Let me tell you, this was not on the table at health class at all. It was like, you better not have sex because you're going to get pregnant. And that was it.
So. Basically the same. I don't know if we've talked about this, but I am a Christian, grew up in a Christian home. And yeah. So really I was told what sex was to a point, and that it was bad, and that yeah. not to have it outside of marriage, and that's it. And I'm like, but now I know nothing. And I just, things like this is part of why I have this podcast, because I want to talk with people that either one can help me learn, or two, help other people that are older, you know, like in their 20s, 30s, and also don't know these things, but feel embarrassed to ask, because it's like, I should know. And I think that it's important to remember that you are not going to know something unless you either ask or were told, or hear it somewhere. So you can't expect yourself to know everything just because you're a certain age.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. That is such a good point. And I love that this is what you're doing out here too, because it's so important. Like, I have clients that I've worked with in their 40s that are like, I never knew this my whole life. And they're angry in a way, like almost like, I can't believe that we had never been taught this. And that's part of what I'm doing here too. Like, you know, this is what is possible. And it's, you know, there's nobody at any school, might be different now. I don't know what the kids are learning right now, but it might be different. But from my perspective, like, no one's going to really teach us this stuff unless we go out there and learn about it for ourselves. And this is part of my mission here, is like to empower this like self-awareness, you know, this self-healing, so that you're then better equipped if you do need to go see a doctor and you need to, you know, talk to your gynecologist about things. Like, let's at least be all on the same starting page, you know?
Yes, exactly. And with the syncing, like women syncing up, what is the science behind that?
Yeah, that's so, it's so cool. I know. I love it. Well, there's a lot of theory about it. But the thing that really like sticks out to me, what I love about that, is that our cycle is actually really regulated by light. So, you know, you can get metaphoric with this, but and that's usually where I tend to go in conversations. So I love like stories and metaphors. It helps us really understand. But anyway,
same here.
Good. Yes, yes, yes. But if you think about like light, you know, and like when a group of women are together, and like the amount of energy that really, you know, accumulates and stirs up and ignites, is we start to then sync up to that light. So like there's hormones and glands in your pituitary gland, and it takes in the light, and then it sends these signals for ovulation, and that then cues your menstruation and things like that. But we are actually, you know, we're really tribal. We haven't really evolved all that much since, you know, even though it feels like we have in our modern world, but like our physiology is still in the days where we co-regulated together, you know, and the days of the red tent, and like where we were really here to support each other. And it made a lot of sense to have everybody menstruating at the same time, because it was easy for people to take care of each other. And this kind of goes along with what you're saying too, about like the full moon versus the new moon. So before there was all this light, this like, you know, external light, we would, almost all of us would be bleeding at the new moon and ovulating at the full moon. So when the light was the brightest, we would be ovulating. So everybody in the red tent, this is like back in the day, everyone would go into the red tent at the new moon, and there would be, you know, shamans of a sort that would take care of the women that were bleeding at the new moon. And then they would wait to bleed at the full moon, where then they could be taken care of. So it's just that we want to be in community. And that's how I really look at it. Like, when we are bleeding and when there's a group of women, it's like, great, this is an opportunity for us to all co-regulate together and to, you know, be taken care of and to be like joining in this community together. That's how I like to look at it.
I love that. I've never thought about it that way. That's really interesting. Mm-hmm. And with the average cycle, can you walk us through like an average cycle pattern?
Yes, absolutely. I would love to. This is where all the understanding really can like coagulate. You know, the body is so cool, and it's amazing that this happens without us having to do anything. So it's very cool. So I'm going to talk about the cycle as if there were no fertilization, like there's no pregnancy, because okay. That's usually what's happening, right? So we'll just talk about it like that so you can get a feel for it. And then when pregnancy occurs, when there's fertilization, something else happens. But we all start on day one, which is the first day of bleeding. We call that day one. And that is the menstruation phase. So there's four phases I'm going to take us through. The first one is menstruation. We call this day one of the cycle. Technically, it is actually the end of the cycle, but because it's easier to like, you know, see that there is something happening because blood is happening, we call it day one, and we'll get back around to that and it'll make sense. So the first day of the bleed is day one, menstruation. It's about 3 to 7 days or so, depending on what is going on. This is when our hormones are at their lowest, the first day of our menstruation. As soon as we start to bleed, our hormones start to climb back up. So we call this specifically estrogen. Okay, so there's three hormones. There are more. There's like five main ones, but I'm just going to talk about three, which is estrogen, progesterone, and a little bit of testosterone. And that does become important if we're seeing challenges. But we really want to really pay attention to estrogen and progesterone. Those are the two main ones to understand. So estrogen specifically, once we start bleeding, starts to climb back up in the cycle. So when we think about these four phases, it's really helpful and makes it really intuitive when we correlate each phase with a season. So I live here in New England. I know you do too, Abigail. And we are really lucky here because we get to see all four seasons like very clearly, and it's really cool. So if you are somewhere where you get to experience four seasons, like this makes sense. So menstruation, we call that inner winter. So it's really nice to think of it that way because we understand intuitively how to take care of ourselves in the winter, right? We know that we don't want to be cold. We want to stay warm. We want to be eating well-cooked food, you know, that's easy to digest. We want to keep our energy kind of into ourselves. It's not the same as like the outward energy of the summer, right? So this is menstruation. And our hormones are still very, very low on the chart. They're very, very low, but they're slowly starting to pick back up each day of menstruation. So then after menstruation is called the follicular phase. And this phase lasts for about 7 to 10 days. And this is when our hormones are rising, and we call this inner spring. And estrogen mainly is rising and rising. And it rises every day until ultimately ovulation. But for now, the follicular phase is your inner spring. And we can think of this as a phase of growth. Things are starting to wake up in the body and grow. So during menstruation, we are releasing the endometrium, which is the uterine lining. So what happens in the follicular phase is things have to rebuild, and it's like tissue and life is really regrowing in your body. And that's what's happening in the spring. So that energy, like you start to feel your energy come back, right? And what's really happening in the body is that there's follicles that start to grow around your eggs inside the ovaries. And towards like, you know, maybe like the last day of menstruation, like really towards the end, one follicle starts to become dominant around this egg. It's like a chosen egg, and that egg starts to grow, and that energy just climbs until the next phase, which is ovulation, which we call that inner summer, which is the peak of estrogen. And that follicle that was growing around the egg breaks, and the egg releases and starts to do its traveling down the uterine tubes. People call the tubes the fallopian tubes. I like to call them uterine tubes because they are named fallopian tubes after Dr. Fallopian, and he's a man. So we're just going to take that back, and we're just going to call them the uterine tubes because that is what they are. So, and it's really, ovulation is such an interesting, this is if you're also not on birth control, because birth control suppresses ovulation. So the cycle feels a little different. But on a regular natural cycle, ovulation, it lasts about 3 to 4 days, although ovulation is an event. Like, it happens, the egg releases from the follicle and starts its travel down the tubes. So you can kind of feel this energy for, you know, a couple of days, 3 to 4 days on either side. But if you really tune in, you can actually feel when that ovulation happens, because it's really amazing. But even like the uterine tubes are moving around, the ovary is trying to like allow for suction on the egg for, you know, to travel it. And it's really wild. So if you tune in, you can start to feel that those things are happening. You'll feel some sensations and you can really start to tune into when your ovulation is happening. But anyway, we call this ovulation inner summer. And this is when there's a lot of energy, you know, so estrogen is also really connected and tied to our neurotransmitters like serotonin and dopamine. But also, the point of ovulation, biologically speaking, is that the egg is trying to be fertilized. So what's happening in your body is like your body is showing up for that. And it's like, your hair is shinier, your skin is clearer, there's like a little sparkle in your eyes, like your nails are smooth. There's actual physiological changes that are happening around ovulation to make the body itself, for lack of better words, more desirable to fertilize that egg. It's like, that's its main goal. So our goal is not always to be pregnant, but we can use that energy. You know, if you think about it like this, like, oh, wow, this is a very creative energy. Like, there's a lot of outward energy. It's a good time to like communicate and to put yourself out there and to be out and seen in the world, because that's what your body's trying to do. It's like, oh, look at me. Like, maybe I can attract some fertilization here, you know? So that's what's happening there. So after ovulation is called the luteal phase. And this is what we call inner autumn. And this is really the whole second half of the cycle here. It's like 10 to 14 days, definitely the longest phase of the cycle. And I like to talk about this phase in two different halves, because it can be almost 2 weeks. And I like to think about it like this, like autumn, you know, so like this is a long season and it changes very much. So like early or late September feels really different than late November, right? They're almost like two different seasons, but it's still the fall. So I like to think of this as like early luteal phase, which is right after ovulation, or there's late luteal phase, which we could call the premenstrual phase. So this is when, okay, so we'll take it back to right after ovulation. This is the early luteal. The egg has released from the follicle, from the ovaries, making its way to the uterus, and is going to implant into the uterine lining. So this, and after ovulation happens, estrogen like plummets. It kind of does like a nosedive. And you can probably feel that too in your change of mood and the way that you even just relate to yourself. And you maybe even can see that change happening in your body if you noticed the other signs of ovulation. And so when I first started noticing this, I was like, oh, I could tell, because I would wake up and I was like, so mad, mad at everybody. Like, everyone's just annoying me. Like, what happened? Oh yeah, I ovulated yesterday. So now is the time to turn inward. So the whole point of the first half of the cycle is to be and have this outward energy to attract something to us. And then the second half of the cycle is almost like a nesting phase, where we need to now turn inward and really start to keep our energy to ourselves, where we can reflect and we can almost have like a nesting phase for a potential, I'm quoting here, potential pregnancy. This is what the body thinks. It doesn't know yet that it is or isn't fertilized. So, right. So there's a lot of like reflection that's happening there and this inward energy. So then we enter into the premenstrual phase. And we all know what the premenstrual phase feels like for ourselves. You know, it is definitely an inner phase where we almost sometimes feel like we're like not even fit for the world, you know, like just don't bother me, right? Like, don't talk to me. I'm busy. Like, I'm doing something and like, I'm just not, you know, I just don't want to talk. So, and that's on purpose, you know, that is actually to prepare you to go back into that inner winter where that, you know, I call it like the menstrual cave, you know, where you're really there to really like turn your energy inward to rest and to really like recoup your energy in a way. So that premenstrual week is really, is intended for hibernation. It's like you're getting ready for hibernation. So it starts to make sense when you think of it like that. So we're spending all of our time trying to be our ovulation selves right before our period. Like that's going to lead us to burnout, right? Like that's what that is. So those are big revelations there. So that's basically what happens. So the luteal phase ends, all your hormones are coming back down. I forgot to mention that in the luteal phase, progesterone is the big hormone there that comes in and kind of calms everything. You know, I talked about that nesting energy. I think of progesterone as like a grandma energy, you know, it's like here to just like help us calm down from all that excitement of the first half of the cycle. So then depending on your estrogen to progesterone ratio in a certain point in the cycle, you know, that's actually what might lead to some of our premenstrual challenges. If estrogen goes a little bit higher than progesterone, there's a lot of really good graphs out there to put this in visual terms, because some I like to look at things. So if anyone wants to look up, just look up on Google, just like the graph of the cycle, you know, and it'll, you'll see this in a visual way. It'll make a lot more sense. But so when you think about it like that, okay, so then we go back down, you know, the luteal phase is all of our hormones dip back down to very, very low. And then we start over, we start back with our inner winter with menstruation, and our hormones start to climb back up very slowly. And the cycle starts all over again. So there's really like two halves to the cycle, even though there's four really distinct phases, and our body is literally changing every couple of days, you know, in this model, like every, you know, 7 days, some phases are shorter than others. And it's really helpful for us to know that this is happening so that we can show up and we can really match our expectations of ourselves with what's actually going on in our bodies.
I love that. I've never thought about it in like seasons, but being a New Englander, I will definitely have to keep that analogy in mind. I love that.
Yes. Good. It's and very helpful.
Yes, absolutely. And with tracking it, would you suggest people use an app or paper or either or? And if it's an app that you suggest, is there any particular app that you would suggest people use?
Yeah. Yeah. So this question, I do have an opinion on it, which I'll share, but it really is personal. You know, it's a very personal process to start to become in tune with your cycle. And I think that to make things easy, a lot of times it's helpful to use an app to track like when you're first starting. But however, I think that this kind of connection to our bodies, like taking time to take a minute every day and say, how do I feel today? What is this? Where am I in my cycle? That's something that really needs to happen between you and your body. So I think that when we're tracking ourselves on an app, we are also just relying on that to tell us information about ourselves and to like, you know, it's just like another thing. It's another thing that we're looking at on our phone. It's another like means of distraction for us. Where I feel that the point is to really take a moment away from your screen, away from your phone, away from the distraction. Take a minute and track on paper. Every day, just write down one or two thoughts about how you feel. And that's how to get started. I do have a resource of a free cycle tracker that I'll have this information when we talk about that at the end, that I have created to help you with this. So you would print it out and you would just use this every single day. And then the other thing about having it on paper is that, because the whole point of tracking is to see your patterns and to really see like what is showing up for me in each phase every month. So if you have this one page tracker that has your whole month on one page, you can put these all next to each other and say, oh, look at this, like day 15, this is how I was feeling. Oh, same on this month. Oh, same on this month. And that's harder to do when it's in an app and you have to like scroll through and you're not really looking at it as a whole picture. You're really just looking at it day to day and saying like, what do I need today? And again, like that can be really helpful in the beginning, but I do think that tracking on paper is more empowering. And there are great apps. Like there are some great apps like Alyssa Vitti. She has an awesome book that's called In the Flow. And that comes, it has an app, it's called the Flow app. That one's is pretty good. There's some other ones. I think they're all okay. But I am a big proponent of holding your own data, you know, on yourself. So putting that outside of yourself is just really giving our power away to something else even more. So that's how I feel. But I don't think you can go wrong, because I want you to track your cycle, and not just tracking what day you bleed, but tracking the whole cycle so that you know, like, am I in my ovulation phase? Am I in my luteal phase? Like, where am I in my cycle and how do I need to show up for myself? Yeah.
That's awesome advice. Yeah, I use an app. I think it's called Pea Tracker. I know it has a flower on like the app photo. And it has a space where you can write notes. And so I try my best to go in, even if it's not every day. But if I notice like a big change or whatever, I'll go in and I'll put different things. It is harder in the sense of, like you said, you can't, I mean, you can see the whole month, but you can only see like there's like a dot to say that, oh, you have a note on this day. So you have to click on each day to read it versus having it out on paper. But I do like the fact that the one that I use has that option to put in those notes so that it's not just tracking when I'm bleeding and when it says that I'm ovulating and my symptoms during that time.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. That's right. There's like pros and cons to that. Like it's very convenient, but then like you just mentioned too, when it says I'm ovulating, cause like the apps a lot of times will be like, oh, hey, welcome to day 14. It's your ovulation day. And it's like, well, you don't know that. Like not everybody ovulates on day 14. It depends what's happening in your cycle. So I think like learning what your signs of ovulation are is way more important than just reading that it's telling you that. So I love that it has notes, you know, for you to go in. But I think, again, like seeing the patterns and being able to look at them side by side is super valuable.
Absolutely. And if the resource that you have, if there's a link to it, I can put it in the description of this if you send it to me after we're done recording.
Yeah,
And with that, ovulation and everything, when can women get pregnant on their cycle?
Yeah, great question. So what we were just talking about, like the whole like four phases and the seasons. So we think about ovulation itself. This is the time where we are fertile. So it's either you can call it ovulation or you can call it the fertile time. And this is like a window here that is very helpful to know about yourself, because everyone's is going to be a little different. And just to know some of these days to keep this in mind, it can be super helpful. So ovulation happens after the follicular phase. So I'm going to say it like could be between day 10 to like 16, 17. It's usually around day 14, 15, if this is like a very natural, repeatable cycle. So when ovulation happens on that day, let's just call it day 14, the egg is viable for fertilization for 24 hours. That's it, 24 hours. Now, a sperm can live inside the vagina for 5 days. This is crazy. So if you think about it like that, so if you know what your ovulation window is and you know that like, okay, so I, you know, maybe there was like a potential of, you know, having sperm alive inside of you, like however that happens. And so that's a day, there's like 5 days. If you did that 5 days before your ovulation, there's a potential for pregnancy. But if you know that your ovulation happened already 24 hours later, there is not as much of a potential for pregnancy. So there's like some windows here that you can do your own kind of math on. Do you have questions about that? I hope that that makes sense.
No, it makes complete sense. I was just, my follow-up question would be, I know that they have different apps and different things where if you take your temperature, it can tell you when you're ovulating and when you're fertile. Do you think personally that those are accurate?
Yes. So definitely. So I'm not like a fertilization specialist. Like I don't, I'm not like in doing the family planning method. But I do think that the concepts are real because you can see them in your body. So when, if we think of ovulation as summer, it's going to be the hottest point of the cycle. So then our temperature is going to be the highest that it is all cycle. And that's a sign that ovulation is happening. And you can then start to figure your, like your fertile window around having some data on that. It's, in my opinion, not enough to just do that one cycle. I really like to have three full cycles of like really tracking yourself so that you know that this is a pattern, because our cycle, our hormones are patterns, like they go in patterns. So yes. So the basal body temperature is going to be the highest at ovulation. And there's also some other signs that you can really tell, which is mostly in the cervical mucus. So like the discharge that we all experience, you can notice how that changes throughout the month. So do you want to talk about that for a little bit? Because I know that was something you were wondering too.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So we'll go there. So when we're ovulating, the cervix, well, okay, so the cervix itself is, it releases fluids, discharge. It's almost like a cleansing. I mean, the whole thing is really a cleansing cycle, but the cervix itself has its own cleansing cycle that it goes through, and it releases discharge out from the uterus, you know, through the cervix. So when we are ovulating, the discharge changes, and the cervical mucus comes down the vaginal wall and is actually like a very, it can be like slick and slippery and slidey. They call it like egg white mucus, but you might not always experience that kind of thing. But if you notice that your discharge has changed and is more like sticky and slidey, I call it slidey, then that's a sign of ovulation, because what's happening is the sperm is trying to go up. Well, it's kind of up, but the sperm is trying to go up the vaginal canal and trying to get to the egg that was released from the ovaries. So to make its way up the vaginal canal, it actually needs some help. So it needs this lubricating substance that the cervix releases to help the sperm slide through the vaginal wall to the uterus. So that is really wild. It's a crazy thing that happens, that like our bodies are here, like it knows, it's like, okay, this is the time where we need to like help this along. And so you can start to tell like, oh, my mucus is starting to change. And then you can tell when it changes back and it starts to get a little bit thicker, maybe a little bit cloudier, a little bit more, like if you notice that it's too clumpy, that's like a whole other thing. If it starts to feel like cottage cheese, that could be like an infection type of thing. But if you notice that it just gets thicker and it starts to, it's just like, it's like more like clear, not as clear, but like cloudier white, you can say, okay, then it must be that I'm past ovulation now, because the mucus is starting to like dry, almost dry up, so that it's not as easy for the sperm to get up the canal there. So there's some signs there too of ovulation, and like knowing when you're pregnant, when your fertile window is, by paying attention to your temperature and also to the mucus that you see coming out. And that's really helpful to track, even all cycle long, to track your mucus so you know where you're at.
That makes complete sense. And with that, I know we had mentioned birth control a little bit earlier, and you had said that you could talk about that later. I feel like now would be a good time, since we're talking about getting pregnant. What are your thoughts on birth control as a whole?
Well, this is, you know, again, like I have my opinions, but also it's very subjective. You know, there are, in my opinion, there's a purpose for it when it's needed and necessary. And also, I think that learning about your own natural cycle can be really, really helpful. But it's, I think it's important to know what ovulation or what birth control is really doing to the body. So ovulation is obviously this natural process that has benefits to it that are beyond just, you know, getting pregnant. To have a really healthy ovulation cycle means that you have a healthy system, mm-hmm. because this is all very natural. So it's not, you know, I think this maybe goes under the category of another lie that we've been told that the body doesn't need ovulation and that's just something that we can just shut off and there's no repercussions to it. And that's just not true. So it's important to know if you're going to go on a hormonal birth control to know that you actually are stopping ovulation from happening. So, and that's okay. You know, that can be okay, but also it's like throwing a pebble into this stream, you know, where now the body has to do this huge workaround just to regulate itself again. So yeah, it's important to know. And if we're not doing ovulation and we're not having the cycle and the waves and the changes, then when we do come off of the birth control, we have to get to know ourselves again in a way that can be difficult because of what we were saying before. We are not taught any of this. So when the body starts to recycle itself, starts to re-enter the cycle, it can be really jarring, you know, and oh my God, I have all these emotions and I have all of this, you know, for me, the biggest thing was emotions. When I came off of birth control, I was on birth control for 12, 13 years or so. And coming off of it, realizing that I actually have this cycle of emotions that's here to help me process things and move things through. And then the body itself, sometimes it can take a couple of years sometimes for your body to regulate hormones after coming off of birth control and not having ovulation for so long. And, you know, that is what's going on. And I think it's important to know that. But also, if birth control is something that you feel you need, I think there's a lot of reasons why it's really helpful for people at certain times in their lives. And I think that it's really powerful and it's empowering that we do have a choice like that when this never used to be a choice for women at all. So personally, I feel more in tune with my body without being on birth control, knowing that the natural cycle is working well, but also when I was using it, I do understand that that was serving its purpose for me too, you know? So yeah. I don't want anyone to feel like that they have to go off birth control, but if you are going to come off of it, you know, there's also a lot of replenishing to do at the same time. And that's important to know.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes complete sense. And going back to the menstruation part of the cycle with different types of bleeding, like spotting, if it's heavy, dark, bright, brown, what are some of the meanings behind those different things?
Yeah, good question. Good question. So there is almost like a rainbow that people may experience when it comes to different colors of blood. Ultimately, the reddest red of the blood is I'm going to say quote unquote healthiest, but it's really about, again, it's about just learning what it is for you. But the redder the blood, it means that it's fresh. Because when blood is exposed to oxygen, it can start to turn brown. So it's a good indicator to know if you have red blood, that means everything is flushing through the right, you know, on time. It's really, you know, the endometrium is shedding the blood. And, you know, sometimes with the bright red blood, there can be, some thickness to it because we're releasing tissue and that's totally normal. Sometimes there can be some clots in there, which are normal, but also just want to keep an eye on them. If they start to get too big, then it can also be a sign of too much estrogen. So that's something to kind of keep in mind. Red means it's fresh and that everything is kind of working in the right way. Brown, when things start to get brown, it's like I said, it can be starting to oxidize. So sometimes you may have brown spotting at the beginning of your period, and then it might, you know, turn pink and then red, right? So that is like almost like we haven't fully released from the last cycle.
Hello, friends. So as you may have noticed, this episode ends in a weird spot. And you may have also noticed that this episode is titled Part One. So if you are one of the few people that tend to listen as soon as that episode drops, to those, I truly thank you and your dedication to listening to every episode. The second half will be out this evening, so you will be able to listen to it over the weekend or next week, whenever you want to listen, or this evening when it comes out. But I did split it up into two parts, so stay tuned for part two. You are not, like, there's no issues with your Spotify or your iHeartRadio or whatever it is. It doesn't just randomly stop. Well, it does, but there is more to the conversation. It will just be out in a second episode later this evening.